and was trying to extract out the ricin in her kitchen.
Welcome to the Prepared X Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 62 of the Prepared X Podcast. In today's interview, I talk with Lawrence Roberge. Lawrence has many years of experience in research and laboratory instruction and the design teaching of very many techniques as it relates to biological weapons, bioterrorism, as well as some baseline knowledge in chemical and nuclear weapons. Fascinating discussion. We got talking about some of the threats that are out there currently around the world and how they may impact us. We got talking about some local issues here in North America that have popped up and could be potential threats to our communities here, again, in the northern parts of the states. We got talking a little bit about the cyber role and how that could impact, and a scenario there where we have a cyber attack at the same time as a biological or some kind of chemical attack. So it could be fairly chaotic, and I think interesting scenario that Lawrence discusses there. And then he also talks about what the future might hold in terms of preparing for all of this. So a great conversation with Lawrence. Here's the interview.
Well, good morning, Lawrence. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for joining us on today's podcast. It's a subject we've not touched before here at PreparedX, so I'm sure our listeners are going to be excited to hear about your background as well as your expertise within this specific field. Before we get started with the interview, Lawrence, can you just give the listeners some of your background and what you've been up to throughout your career, please?
Certainly. A lot of my career involves biology and microbiology, medicine, anatomy and physiology, things like that. I had been doing a certain amount of teaching, but I wanted to pursue some research areas. And one of the areas I looked at was invasive species as a form of biological weapon, especially when you look at how food commodities are so sensitive nowadays.
Right.
A variety of infective agents and other things. More recently, my research has been looking at prions and the use for a biological weapon. And I've also done some research into the plant toxin ricin. A lot of the things that I've done for well over a decade is look at how we are prepared, how are we not prepared, what are the new and rising threats, and some of them we are in no way prepared for, and it's gotten me quite concerned. The Blue Ribbon panel that testified in front of Congress, for example, yesterday, basically said, we're not prepared for any biological or bioterrorist attack in any way, shape, or form. We've got stuff, yes, but we are in no way up to snuff when it comes to a large-scale attack. Or even a scale attack, because we really don't understand some of the concepts, and so that's going to add to the fear factor.
Sure.
That is a critical element in any bioterrorist attack.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay, so
yeah.
I think we're going to dig a little bit deeper into your history as well, but
sure.
Let's kick off here. I noticed reading through your resume here that you'd advised some companies back during the first Gulf War, and I remember,
yes,
being a young soldier back then, we did a lot of preparedness for the, as we used to call it, the NBC threat back then, the nuclear, biological, and
yep,
chemical. That's obviously changed over the years. So in the British Army, we did a lot of prep work before we went out to the first Gulf War. So I'm intrigued to hear what advice you gave back then as well, and how that has changed, over the last 25, 26 years probably.
Yep. At that time, I was working at a formerly NASA-affiliated technology transfer center called NIRAC, and I was one of the go-to persons for issues involving biology, biotechnology, medicine, things like that. So I had a bunch of companies that were turning around saying, you know, what about anthrax and what about this and what about that? The tragic thing is that studies came out afterwards and they said, you know, if they had taken even a wet slurry, in other words, there's two different types of ways you can apply anthrax, as a dried particle, which usually is in a spore. So it's a protective capsule that the bacteria use. Or you can do it as sort of a mixture with its culture medium and whatever. And if they had sprayed that in a line that was going to go downwind to the line of troops in the Gulf War, they would have had somewhere well over 100,000 casualties. And that's because they really were not prepared to deal with this. Now, they had some people that were in uniforms, but the MOP 4 uniforms, which is military operations protective posture, you know, the mask, the gloves, the suit, et cetera, those things are hot.
Yeah.
What's even worse is those things are hot in higher temperature environments.
I remember. Trust me, I remember.
Yeah, and unfortunately, even the troops that weren't in the MOP 4 outfits were required, I believe it was in Saudi, they had to drink a mandatory 6 liters of water a day. So they had these little mountains of empty bottles everywhere. How does this relate to bio warfare? Because really, you could try to vaccinate all these troops, but what if they use some other agent? And what about the troops that weren't vaccinated? And there's always that saying, you know, if you have a soldier and you kill him, that's one thing. But if you have a soldier and you make him injured, you've really taken out 4 other soldiers because they're going to be required to take care of or carry away the individual. So you're going to have a greater effect if you make many more sick or injured than just individually killing someone. Now, I don't want to sound ruthless there, but this is somewhat the logic that occurs in warfare. The other thing is this. We now know that Iraq had quite a lot of different types of chemical and biological agents. We've never really seen what would happen to a combined attack. For example, what if they used a blistering agent along with a bioweapon? You have now exposed tissue because of the blistering and the resulting basically damaged tissue, as well as now the exposure to the pathogenic agent. Would that speed up infection and things like that? Basically, even more important is this. The military is desperately trying to look for a more advanced protective posture suit. I was at a conference, a DITRA conference of 2017, and they really said, look, we've got to do something here. They did some procedures, and I think it was either, I think it was Iraq, after the second invasion. And there's an admiral saying there, look, it's one thing to have, you know, your troops in full outfit, but it's another thing when 5 to 10% of them are going to get kidney stones. And that was because of the extreme heat and the physiological events that occur while they're in these suits, while it's 130, 140, and they're waiting to go into action. Well, 5 to 10% doesn't sound a lot, but it does sound a lot if you've got full divisions of individuals and you have so many of them being down for kidney stones. So what have we learned from Gulf War? We learned that what we thought were countries that were far less sophisticated can develop some very serious weapons. We have learned that there are a lot more weapons out there, and they're further down the pike in development. In part, what was the, supposedly what I had understood was a disruptor that really knocked down the North Korean U.S. denuclearization meeting in Vietnam was not because they said, no, we're not going to disarm at all, but suddenly they started adding on to the plate. And I believe it was Bolton who turned around and said, yeah, but you got to also get rid of your chemical stockpiles and your biological stockpiles. That's because the chemical and the biological are already there. and they're in abundance. Adam side is they've got maybe 4,000 tons of it. They've got nerve agents. They've got blister agents. And there have been reports that they've seen equipment that could be dual used. Yeah, it can make a biological pesticide, but that's easy to flip over and use the same machinery to make anthrax. Do you see what I'm saying? So we're in a world that a lot of the technology can be easily flipped around.
Yeah.
And made into weapon to make used to be making weapons of mass destruction.
Sure, I think that's a great lead-in as well to my next thought and question that I had with regards to the current current threats. We recently have done at least a couple of anthrax scenarios. These for different countries around the world, and helping their governments prepare for. In one case, it was prepared for a major sporting event, and the other was to prepare a local government that has challenges or concerns for terrorism, and they wanted to look at the bioterrorist threat based on that. So what are some of the current threats, just in general terms, globally? We'll come on to North America, and if it's different, sure. I'd love to hear that. But what about globally? What are the threats that are out there, and are they any different to us folks here that are in North America?
Well, there's actually one that you can tie from a global threat back to a local threat, and I'll talk about that for a second. It's called ricin. Now, ricin is a protein that's extracted from the castor bean. Now, the castor bean, everybody remembers castor oil, and castor bean is very prominent in countries like Africa, et cetera, but it's also very prominent as an ornamental plant that you see in your home gardens and places around, even in North America. But let me give you a couple of pointers here. When a person is exposed to it, they only need an absolute small amount, a speck. And what it does, this poison basically shuts down protein synthesis inside the cells. And as it does this, within a short period of time, the person will die, probably 4 days, let's say. This is going to be difficult for even local doctors to understand unless they've been warned, hey, there was a ricin usage. But if not, they'll probably misdiagnose it, and the person will pass away, sadly, without any real supportive medicine. Has this occurred? Fortunately, law enforcement has been able to intercept several attacks. One of them would have been Germany's 9/11. And what that happened was an individual had bought about 1,000 seeds or something to that, a large amount, and he was extracting the poison from the seeds, and he was going to distribute it. And fortunately, law enforcement and intelligence forces worked together to stop this. But this is how serious this is. It's not that hard to do. You don't need a nuclear reactor. You don't need 20,000 dollars of equipment. You can do it in your, yes, kitchen. Now, what do I mean by that? A more recent situation occurred in Vermont, and that was a situation where there was an elderly lady, about 72, and she was living in a retirement village. She didn't like some of her neighbors, so she walked over to some of the nice ornamental plantings that were around in the village, plucked out a bunch of seeds, and was trying to extract out the ricin in her kitchen. And she was going to poison them. And law enforcement caught it in time. But here's what I'm talking about. This is not somebody that's, you know, has to be a major biochemist or molecular biologist. This is somebody who was able to do it in a very simplified place, and that would have led to a lot of deaths. And maybe if they didn't catch it in the sense of make the connection with ricin, they would have missed it in a diagnosis and in any type of supportive care that could have been offered. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. And do you remember?
We have a lot of.
Sorry, do you remember, Lawrence, how the law enforcement picked up on that in terms of catching the lady before she went ahead and.
That they weren't really that revealing on that aspect.
Oh, okay.
Because I tried to look around in several of the local papers, etc., for more information.
Okay.
But this is not unusual. Not too far from where I happen to reside, there was a case going back to the mid 2000s, there was a gentleman in Agawam, Mass, who actually also did the same thing. They didn't pick up on the full dosage of what he had been able to extract so far. So they let him sit in a holding cell and had a wire in there. And he bragged to everybody, opened his mouth. He had not only extracted some ricin, but he had more castor beans and he had rosary peas. Now, rosary peas are another type of plant that has a different but similar effect poison called abrin, A-B-R-I-N. And he was going to basically go out and kill a bunch of people. And this was something that the FBI got involved with and so on and so forth. So they caught him. But this doesn't always, you're going to have a time when it's not always going to happen. And some people are going to be very seriously ill and die. And there's no cures for these. There's no counter agents immediately.
Have you any thoughts on the Dominican Republic at the moment, where we've seen about 10 deaths currently, some in hotels and other destinations. So, any thoughts on that, where this may be something linked to this type of threat?
I haven't seen any information that indicates that. I've been almost thinking that it's been a mix of both bad food and perhaps some other more common toxins that were used. But nobody has been able to come up and say conclusively it's this or that.
Right, yeah.
They're still scratching their head. That's what I understand.
Yeah, that's what I'm reading between the lines as well. Yeah, it's still quite baffling. Okay, great. Back on track. So from a business standpoint, Lawrence, should they do to understand how to prepare for these types of threats? Obviously, businesses do all kinds of preparedness as it relates to their different risks that they face on a day-to-day basis. But as it relates mm-hmm. to this threat, I assume one of the things they can do is start to work with local first responders as well as health departments to at least trying to understand some of the potential issues. Is that a good starting point?
I think it's a good starting point. It's always a good starting point to be in cooperation with law enforcement and first responders when you're dealing with this. If one organization feels it's been targeted for some reason or whatever, maybe what it helps is to have sort of in the binder, open it up and start going through the strategies of what we would do if we had a shutdown for this reason, this reason, this reason. And one of them would be, okay, how can we have an alternative site? Even if you don't have a big budget, where could you turn to get an alternative site set up to keep business operations going? What would you do if you needed to, where people had to shelter in place, particularly either in the business or at their homes? Because when we're talking about a biological agent, keep in mind that we haven't really talked about some of the really nasty things. The things that are communicable, smallpox, okay, plague, tularemia, things like this. Some of these are deadly, and some of these can be easily passed once you have a patient zero to others. And sometimes you have situations where individuals are contaminated, they're infected, and it will be days before the symptoms show up. Smallpox is one case. It can be anywhere from 7 to 21 days. Ebola, everybody knows right now and is terrified. And I think that that's something where if we have a situation where we end up having on U.S. soil, let's say, or Canadian soil or Australian soil, anything like that, where someone comes in and is clearly contaminated but has exposed a bunch of others, then they've got to be able to be prepared for sequestration, quarantine, if you want to say, and dealing with this. If I can take a moment, let me move off from the business for a second and keep this in mind too. Cooperation during quarantine is an absolute must. And we're going to be tested on this. If you remember what happened during the situation in Canada with SARS, and that was an infectious agent, And there was one individual who just said, I'm not going to stay here in the hospital. Bleep off, and left. And it ended up causing great fear in Toronto. You have to have the capability to understand if you lose somebody, how can you replace somebody quickly? If you talk about the business situation, let me roll it right back here again. If you recall when they were having the major upscale, if I'll say it this way, of casualties from HIV and some of the African nations, one of the things that would happen is some of the places, such as banks, et cetera, were saying, we train somebody, and within 6-8 weeks, they'd be gone. And the reason they'd be gone is they would die from the end stage of an HIV infection. And they didn't have the available drugs. You have to have a plan of how are you going to get replacement people, either because they're sick, they're sequestered, or they're dead. Does that help?
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. That's great. Great detail. Look, this. I look at this from a couple of different avenues. You know, there are businesses now that, as you know, and many people know out there, that test these various chemical agents, these biological agents, and they test them because they push products out into the marketplace and into the government. So antidotes, for instance, is one. And so they have these facilities that, you know, that manage and have these various different, bio warfare chemicals and all the other good stuff that's stored there. To me, you know, we would imagine they'd have strong plans in place to protect these. But, you know, is there any link or is there any threats as it relates to, I was just thinking cyber, cybersecurity, and could that play a role in any of these threats being used against even a state nation or, you know, even obviously against another country? You know, because there's a lot of data probably within these businesses that manage all this different, you know, all these different chemicals. So what are your thoughts on that as it relates to the cyber piece?
I think that the cybersecurity for places that are either doing the research for development of counter agents, whether it's for nuclear, chemical, or biological, that would be a very good point. Okay. Some of the real intense BL4, BL3 labs are government held for the most part. Okay. But they would be the ones that would also do the testing for various drugs. If it's bacteria, we're talking antibiotic. If it's a viral agent, we're talking virus. If it's, let's say, some toxin, biotoxin, like mycotoxins or something else like that, you might have something like a monoclonal antibody drug. In each one of those cases, yes, the client that's making this information, that's making these products, would probably want to secure their information of anything that's discussed with places that are doing the actual testing.
Mm-hmm.
And cybersecurity is going to be utmost because, let's face it, if you had a breakdown, think about what I mentioned before, if you had a combined chemical and biological attack at the same time, you would have a much higher casualty rate. Well, what if you had a cyber attack at the same time having a biological attack?
Mm-hmm.
Cyber attack would be directed toward trauma centers and the communication lines that exist between government,
right,
and the local civilian sectors, yeah, towns, their boards of health, and the communication lines that exist between state testing labs and CDC. If those were severed, you would have total chaos, and you would get the advantage of having the, let's say, the bioagent proliferate further before you could do containment using such things as like quarantine, et cetera.
Doomsday scenario, yeah. Lawrence. Doomsday scenario. We like our scenario planning here. That's a good one.
Okay, fine. Then I'll just throw this out. It's not that I want any of these things to happen. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But I learned this years ago. There was a very nice gentleman I met at one conference, Randy Merchant, and he basically was convincing, he used to be in the FBI, convincing head of the FBI, Janet Reno, look, you got to think like the bad guy.
Yep.
Why? Because they're thinking it. And if you can develop the counter strategy for when they pop up with something crazy, fine. You're ahead of the game. You don't want to see these things happen, but you have to be prepared for them because preparation is going to be part of your deterrence for them actually doing this stuff. And if it happens, at least you're going to have the preparation to minimize the casualties, to minimize the industrial, economic, et cetera, damage, and perhaps get back into the motion of things much quicker than dealing with a lot of contaminated areas that are then considered almost, you know, area of denial.
Sure.
For bioterrorist version of area of denial, it's this site is contaminated, we can't use it, you don't want to go on it, it's got either a viscous chemical agent like VX or something else like that, or it's got some bioagent that can degrade quickly like prions. There you go.
Mm. Fascinating. And so as we start to wrap up here, great information. Mm-hmm. What's the future hold from your perspective in terms of the biological and bioterror threats that we have?
Okay. Obviously, it's very clear that Congress recognizes that they don't have the resources yet. You're going to have to see more funding put in, not merely just to train people to be prepared for biological events, but to have the problem solvers there that may have to get active even at a moment's notice because people are going to develop new techniques. The biology explosion that we're having, you're having synthetic biology, you're having people being able to develop simple devices that you would see in laboratories costing thousands of dollars, and they're building it from a variety of simple tools at home, the do-it-yourself biologists. You're going to have these threats, and you're going to have strategies to counter them, whether it is release of striga to wipe out the corn crops, whether it is release of an attack by prions that render agricultural land useless and we have a lot of mad cow diseases, or suddenly somebody's releasing a large amount of plague in the Mall of America. We have to have the capabilities to not merely contain it, but to recover from this. And that's where you're going to need a lot more resources because there are a lot more crazy people today. And some of them are dead serious. That's not merely just going to be the United States. Our friends in Canada, Australia, United Kingdom, Europe, et cetera, they are all facing these similar threats. And again, the opponents of each of these governments does not need sophisticated laboratories anymore to make some really nasty materials and in great quantity either. How's that?
Perfect. Well, great way to wrap up the show here. We appreciate you taking the time out today. If people want to get a hold of you, Lawrence, how do they communicate with you? Are you on LinkedIn or any of the other social
channels?
I'm
on LinkedIn, yeah.
Okay.
I think that would be the best way to do it.
Okay, and we'll add your bio to the bottom of the show here. And again, that show will go out to all the iTunes and various different podcast distribution channels. And again, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. It's a great honor, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. Take care, Lawrence. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 62 of the PreparedX podcast. For those of you that are not aware, we recently launched First Look. First Look is a self-guided exercise package that contains a customized scenario and a self-evaluation report form. You walk your teams through a scenario that we help you create. So great product that we've just put out there. If you want more information, just go to preparedx.com and you'll find information on our services page. Just look for First Look. And if you've got any questions, feel free to reach out. Again, and wrapping up, please share this on iTunes, rate us, and I would love your feedback on our podcasts and all of our content. Thanks again.